I can't believe that this has happened in Australia. It's so wrong.
It's inexplicable to me and deeply, deeply upsetting.
You just keep doing what you do. You keep on going out, living your life, but at the end of the day, you know that something terrible happened, you know, 400 metres from where you live and where you walk every day.
Some of the sounds there of what we've all been hearing in Bondi, in Sydney, in the wake of this horrific attack on Sunday night. Hello, welcome to this bonus edition of Global Roaming. It's Hamish McDonald
and
here.
And Geraldine Doogue here. And we're in Bondi. It is Tuesday morning, and I've been watching from a distance. But you've been here, well, on Monday and Tuesday morning, Hamish. What's it been like here?
It's been highly unusual. It's been sad. It's been somber. People now reflecting and laying their flowers and taking a moment. But I think certainly Monday morning, it was just people walking around in shock, not sure where to look, where to stop, what to do. It was unusual, even the politicians arriving for their interviews. You know, normally they walk over, shake your hand, say hello, you get to business. But instead it was politicians walking up to you, hugging you, crying in your arms.
Really?
Kelly Sloane, the state opposition leader in New South Wales, former journalist, only just in the job. She's the member for Vaucluse. She was at one of the Hanukkah festivals here and ended up being bundled into the back of an ambulance for her safety and then somehow underneath the bridge and was shepherding children to safety. She was so shaken. We're going to hear from her during this episode of Global Roaming, but I guess the reason we thought this was worth marking is that this is the fight, this is the conflict brought home to Australia. Mm. There's no way of mistaking this. This is everything that we have heard is possible. These broader global tensions, which we have known are bubbling on our shores, bursting up.
Yes, it is. It's, yes, I mean, it does feel quite eerie here. There's certainly an incredible, there's a lot of people who want to be here. There's a lot of police still here. But yes, look, I sort of feel I've been watching as much as I possibly can. I think there's a lot more to learn about those two attackers.
Well, police and the intelligence agencies already looking at their recent trip to the Philippines.
Indeed.
Of course, it was 2019 that ASIO first identified the younger of these two gunmen because of his association with individuals allegedly plotting a terror attack. But the authorities, the Prime Minister, stressing that there was no evidence at the time that there was any intention on the part of this young man or his family members to be involved in or prepare for or carry out any style of attack. And, you know, I suppose one of the things we have heard recently from people like the ASIO Director General, Mike Burgess, is that radicalisation can occur very quickly. This is not a process that takes long lead times now, where people are sent off to madrasas or to camps overseas for training. This is something that can happen in a bedroom, in a city or a town in Australia very rapidly, because people are viewing content, images, ideology online, and it can happen fast.
Yes. Look, I don't know. You know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I reject it, but I think there's quite a lot more to find out. I can't quite understand how these two people who clearly had, they were very intentional. In fact, I think the onus will be on those security agencies as to why they weren't more alert to six guns owned by a father of a son who they'd had. Now,
someone that they had looked at in the past that then went off to the Philippines.
Recently went off to the Philippines, yes. Yeah. There's a whole lot I can see that the appropriate timing to raise these issues, you know, people were raising them on Sunday night. There was a persistent journalist at the press conference at 10 o'clock, and I think both Chris Minns and the Prime Minister said, look, now is not the time. We've got people fighting for their lives, as they were, still are, in hospital. But there really are questions to be asked about how those two created such mayhem and shattered such a sort of self-belief. But look, Australia will just, you know, the Australian spirit will have to come back, which is why that act of extraordinary heroism by Ahmed, is just such a gift to have that man, you know, come out and put himself on the line so much. Dare I be personal, my Palestinian Lebanese hairdresser today was still basking in the sense of pride of that man, which is part of the Australian multicultural story.
So you're going to hear a number of different voices on this episode, but we thought perhaps the best place to start is with a snapshot of the people I've been talking to here in Bondi.
We come down to the beach pretty much every morning, and we wanted to come down again to show our support. We're all mortified with what happened yesterday.
I think a lot of people, especially the locals, are still in shock. You know, we come down for a swim every day and walk across that bridge every single day.
It's a really sort of surreal and actually a nightmarish feeling. Just absolute shock that this could happen just at our local Bondi Beach.
I'm heartbroken. The people who were killed were innocent, ordinary people who celebrate their Judaism with joy, with love, with antagonism towards absolutely no one.
I mean, we've been fearing something like this was going to happen for ages, and it's actually happened.
I think there's a lot of angry people here, and it's purely down to poor leadership. You know, poor leadership.
Do you feel safe?
No.
The Jews are the last standing people, stay united and are together, and we will not be broken.
You know, while it's been sort of that devastation and that nightmare pit in your stomach feeling, at the same time it's been coupled with an actual outpouring of love and concern and understanding. So it's actually been quite amazing. At the same time, I actually haven't had a chance to fully digest it at this moment yet.
I think that the community will move on, and Bondi will get back to being the great place it always has been, but nobody will forget.
So as you're going to hear, some really raw emotions from members of the community here in Bondi. A lot of sadness, a lot of anger, but also a real hope, as you could hear, that Bondi will recover from this. And I'm sure they will. Do you feel that, Hamish?
Look, I think everyone that I've spoken to feels that somehow these spaces will be reclaimed. People, you know, said to me yesterday, I want to get back in the water. I want to do the things here that I have always done here. Nothing will stop me from that. But as we sit here, the whole place is ringed by police tape. You had to call me to get to find your way into where we've been reporting from. We're, by the way, just next to the Bondi Pavilion. In fact, under some of the archways, the big floral tribute just to our side, the politicians are floating through as we speak. Julie and Lisa, from the Shadow Cabinet, just wandered past, a prominent Jewish Australian politician. Susan Lee's been here this morning, but also the Israeli ambassador. You're going to hear from him soon. First, though, Geraldine and I have sat down to talk with Danielle Jacu. She's the granddaughter of a man called Eddie Jacu, a Holocaust survivor who built his life here in Australia. He wrote a book called The Happiest Man in the World. And Danielle is reflecting on both him, his legacy, and this moment.
Danielle, thank you very much for being here with us today. It must be a very difficult time for Jewish people like yourselves to process one way and the other.
Yes. Thanks for inviting us to speak and giving us a voice. I think it's difficult for Jewish people, and it's difficult for the wider community as well. I feel very strongly that this event terrorised not only Jewish people, but everybody who was on Bondi Beach and New South Wales and Australians generally.
You texted me on Sunday night within an hour or so of this unfolding, and you said, Hamish, we weren't exaggerating. Why did you say that?
Because I feel like the Jewish community is often painted as catastrophic and that we exaggerate, that we are a community that is informed by multi-generational trauma, that we, you know, we have security guards outside, armed security guards outside our institutions and our schools and our synagogues, and that, you know, that's seen as over the top sometimes. Regularly. I mean, like, I hear people just, you know, why do you guys have security guards? We have a volunteer group, plus we have armed security guards. So I sometimes feel like because we're painted as that sometimes histrionic kind of community, look, I don't want to feel vindicated. I don't want to say, listen, I told you something like this was going to happen. But I guess at the same time, I felt like, yeah, we as a community have not been exaggerating. It has been about our community and we have been the targets, but we have been saying that it will affect the wider Australian society. I just wasn't sure exactly how it was going to play out, but I have been waiting for this.
This is a tough question for me to ask at the moment, but what could have been done better? Because I would have thought there were a lot of condemnations of a lot of that. So I've never quite grasped what you think could have been done better.
I feel like that's a big question because I can't speak for every member of the Jewish community. I can really only speak to what, you know, I personally feel. I know that there's a lot. I mean, Gillian Siegel says there's no point laying blame anywhere. We really need to be future focused about how to approach this. Her report, as you know, has been sitting not acted upon for the last 5 months. I don't want to politicise this massacre, this traumatic event, but we need really strong leadership against Jew hatred and racial vilification. I know that there's a lot of racial vilification against many minority groups at the moment. Let's deal with them all and let's deal with them one at a time. At the moment, the Jewish community is the target, and I know that the Islamic community is too. But right now, we've got a Hanukkah party on Sunday with a little girl, 10 years old, face painted at a petting zoo at a Hanukkah party that is, you know, where interfaith communities and everyone around is invited to. What kind of threat was she to anybody? So we needed much more prompt action. There is no place in Australia right now for weak leadership. I mean, it's too late now to say, although I would like to think that the next event can be circumvented. We needed more done to mitigate this kind of event.
Danielle, we on Global Roaming talk all about the issues that are unfolding around the world, and increasingly we're finding that those issues, those divisions, those conflicts are proximate to us here in Australia. And we can all hear our leaders trying to grapple with this and find the words to draw community together. How do you do that now when these divisions and conflicts continue around the world and we are a multicultural nation, we have that diversity, and therefore those fissures exist? They do today, they will tomorrow. How do you find a pathway forward that does help us find the common threads, if you want to put it that way?
I wish I was the right expert to answer this question, because we probably wouldn't be having this conversation today if somebody had been able to answer it well. I think I'll start. So I do a lot of work in interfaith engagement. I'm actually a spokesperson. I'm on the board for National Council of Jewish Women Australia. We do all of my work for them is about interfaith engagement. We have a lot of non-Jewish allies who come and rally around us, and we support each other. When they need support, we support them. And when we need support, they support us. And we're doing something right. I don't know. And I think what you're speaking to, sorry, Hamish, there is that, you know, there has been a conflict between Israel and Hamas, and Jews in the diaspora and in Australia are being targeted for their support of Israel's existence and defence. And that is having this kind of negative influence, or, you know, there's this retaliation for diaspora Jews and Australia. We're looking about in Australia and how to keep social cohesion and prevent further loss of our social cohesion. Like, I wish I had the answer for this question.
Can I ask you this, for instance, because I think you're right, by the way, I think that's a very good analysis. That walk across the Harbour Bridge, like the manner in which people express themselves, which is about free speech and it's about sort of feeling strongly. Now, people have pointed, I've heard people in the Jewish community say that that Harbour Bridge walk, is that the sort of thing, to be precise,
yeah.
that was not helpful, would you say?
I think the community would say that that was a very unhelpful event. We have allies, Iranian allies, who have fled. I'm talking about we, the National Council of Jewish Women Australia, have allies in the Iranian community who have fled the IRGC. You've got the Ayatollah Khomeini's poster being walked across the Opera House. Harbour Bridge, yes. You know. I would say that they were probably not very discerning about who they were marching with and breaking bread with that day. I mean,
that's the core of it, isn't it? That's the dilemma.
I think so. I mean, that wasn't about harmony and peace, and it wasn't about supporting everybody here. That's selective support. The Jewish community was not being supported. Anyone who supports Israel's existence and defence was not being supported that day.
But there is a layer to this, right, which is what the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been talking about and referring to in terms of the Australian government's response.
I think he ought to butt out. I do not think that was a helpful intervention.
But there is the right in Australia to criticise the government of Israel, the actions of the state of Israel. And I dare say many listening, many of those that walked across the Harbour Bridge may have been much more in that camp of criticising the Israeli government, the IDF, the actions in Gaza, the massive civilian casualties, possibly with no intention at all to align with or have anything to do with the views, the sentiments of Hamas or Hezbollah or the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. So how on earth do people find a way to square that circle, find the pathway through that?
I feel the weight of my community right now telling me how I should answer this question. And I'm going to say that, firstly, to Israel, you can criticise the Israeli government. You can still support the Israeli people, what they're struggling through and their existence. The existence of Israel. But let's put that aside. How about just waving the Australian flag? How about just being Australian? How about just supporting anybody in Australia who has family overseas that is struggling in a war? How about just wrapping your arms around somebody who you might have been an enemy with in your former country, but because you're in Australia, you're actually a friend? How about putting aside all your hatred? Stop letting it metastasize. That's what my grandfather used to say. Hatred's a disease. Put it aside. You're in Australia, coexist. You want this to be a multicultural, happy, peace-loving community. Be more careful, be more mindful about what you choose to stand for, who you choose to stand with. Just do better.
Danielle, thank you.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thanks, guys.
Not everyone will agree with those sentiments, of course, Geraldine, and many Australians will say, well, they need the capacity to criticise the Israeli government when and where necessary, and that may have nothing to do with Hamas.
That's exactly... look, that's the point. It's how much in a free society you are free to... prick others, as it were, and where it's too dangerous. Now, that's what we're going to have to discuss more about and hold these difficult things in our minds at the same time. No easy solutions. You know, you say that, rolls off the tongue. But that is really hard in Australia. We're a young, modern country, in the modern formation of it, and we expect solutions, and sometimes there aren't easy ones.
I thought it was worth introducing for listeners just a snapshot of some of the people I've spoken to, like the Chief Executive of Surf Life Saving New South Wales. What I hadn't realised, Geraldine, is that it was lifeguards that ran straight into live fire. Yep. They're prepared and trained for a lot, but they ran into the heart of this situation. Here's Steve Pearce.
our lifesavers were the first on the scene. So we had about 30 lifesavers respond immediately out of the clubs into the playground area in the park trying to protect people. I know a lot of the lifesavers went out under fire directly to try and get children out of the school grounds. I know other lifesavers went to try and do CPR and drag injured people away. So extremely traumatic, but just the heroism of our lifesavers, it's just incredible.
I mean, I know you prepare and train your lifesavers for a lot. Are they prepared for something like this?
You know, like, let me say that every surf club has extremely high levels of first aid equipment. We consumed every bandage, every band-aid, every one of our rescue boards was used as stretchers. All the lifesavers are trained in high-level first aid. They're not trained in shotgun wounds. And just some of the efforts of the lifesavers are incredible. Like North Bondi at one stage had four victims with gunshot wounds they were treating in their clubhouse. They had a lady in labour at the same time. Bondi Surf Club was a makeshift triage. They were the first ones out. They were actually having an after-patrol Christmas party, heard the gunfire and went straight out. What they saw was just trauma.
Have you had an opportunity to talk to many of them? How are they doing? Is you're saying some of those lifeguards running into fire to protect people?
Yeah, so I was notified last night when it was happening. So I was talking to someone on scene. I could hear the fire and the gunfire in the background. They are really traumatised. Yeah, it's, one of the lifesavers, she was telling me she tried to assist three people, but they just were too far gone.
You okay, Steve?
Yeah, so yeah, our lifesavers are really traumatised at the moment. So what we're doing at the moment, you know, our main thoughts at the moment is we just opened up a nearby surf club to bring together those members of Bondi and North Bondi just to comfort each other. We've got our councillors in there at the moment and our chaplains in there at the moment. Tomorrow night we'll do like a formal debrief, but you know, our priority is looking after our people.
Steve, look after yourself, look after your people, and you know, I think everyone listening will want to say thank you to all of your people.
Thanks, mate.
Another politician that really stood out to me in conversations this week, Geraldine, is Kelly Sloane. She's the new state opposition leader in New South Wales, the member for Vaucluse. She was here for one of the Hanukkah events. And she's only been in the leadership for a few weeks, and she found herself right in the middle of this.
I was just down the road at another Hanukkah event with our Jewish community. I was on stage about to deliver a speech. It was a really happy occasion. People were dancing, they were throwing their babies in the air, and we were celebrating what was meant to be a really hopeful end to the year and the celebration of light over darkness. But while we were on stage, the crowd started running. They were trying to evacuate. People had heard that there were shots fired nearby. So I did my best to sort of look after the crowd there. And then I was bundled into a car for my safety. And that car just happened to be a local community ambulance. And when I jumped in, the driver had heard that one of his colleagues had been shot. And he said, just put your seatbelt on, we're getting down there. And we arrived within minutes of the devastation at Bondi. And we parked. Unfortunately, we had no idea of what had happened and where, but we parked under that bridge, under the bridge where the gunman had been. And so I saw a little boy and his dad, and they were hiding under the bridge, and I got them into the ambulance and said, you stay here, you know, you stay safe. And then I just ran in and I tried to help people, like everyone else, like our local surf club volunteers who were there working on the victims, like people that had come off the beach, you know, tending to the, you know, to the wounded. It was, you know, the scenes were unimaginable. They were just unimaginable.
I can see you're shaken still.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's something any of us will get over, you know, and you... I think, you know, there's a sense of hopelessness. You know, how on earth could this happen in our beautiful community? And a sense of hopelessness that, you know, the people on the scene, good people doing very brave things, we're not able to save so many people who unfortunately have died. And, you know, my thoughts are with those families and with the people who are injured and what our community is going through as we process this.
Sydney, Australia is looking to leaders right now to help us interpret, to understand, but also to respond. And maybe it's too soon for you to even be entering into that sort of territory, but is there something you could offer to those listening that are feeling that sense of hopelessness?
I would just say that, and it gets said so often, and unfortunately we've had so many tragedies and we stand here and we say we cannot let this define us, but we absolutely can't, because the thing I love about Bondi, my community, it's a community that celebrates its freedoms. It's the Bondi Beach is the greatest expression of Aussie freedoms. And the two evil gunmen who came in yesterday, they tried to tear that apart. And we cannot allow them to tear that apart. And they won't tear it apart, because I know this community and we are incredibly strong. It's a strong community. And our Jewish community is resilient, but this will test them like nothing else in recent years. And so I guess my message is, don't retaliate. Try not to be angry, though everyone will feel angry. I'm feeling angry myself. But the only way we conquer evil like this is to come together as a community. And then in the weeks and the months beyond this, there are a lot of questions to be answered. You know, we cannot allow hate to thrive in our community. We cannot let it break us apart. And that requires work. And I think yesterday was an incredibly chilling reminder that we cannot take our freedoms for granted in this country. And we have to work on it.
Kelly, thank you. Look after yourself.
Thank you.
Just to take this conversation a little further, Geraldine.
And by the way, these are helicopters we can hear over here, don't they?
Yeah, they are police helicopters. There's detectives all over the place. They've actually fenced off the grassy area where all of the deaths occurred, which is just to the north of where we're sitting. And there are police forensics teams in there right now still collecting and analysing evidence. You mentioned the commentary of Benjamin Netanyahu, who has pointed the finger at the Albanese government because of its decision to recognise Palestinian statehood at the UN General Assembly, which happened back in September. Now, the Prime Minister overnight defended that position and said that his job now is to identify ways for us to find national unity. Nonetheless, the commentary of the Israeli Prime Minister has garnered plenty of headlines, and I spoke to the Israeli ambassador, Amir Mamoun, who arrived here in Bondi earlier.
I make the distinction between the Australians of Jewish faith and the State of Israel. We are brothers by faith, but they are Australians. And what we have seen here is a terror attack on Australian citizens. And that's how it should be described, and that should be the focus of the discussion. It happened here.
And so why does the Israeli Prime Minister draw the connection between broader diplomatic positions that Australia has taken and this particular event?
Well, Prime Minister Netanyahu, I'm not going to comment on his statement, was urging basically the Australian government to take all necessary measures. The writing was on the wall. The writing was on the wall, and I will repeat it once again, the writing was on the wall. In my meetings, I've shared my view that if one morning I will wake up to find out that members from the Australians of Jewish faith were murdered, I will not be surprised.
Who did you say that to?
Oh.
To the Prime Minister?
So many people.
Well, some pretty stark warnings. He says that he made, without naming the Prime Minister, but at the most senior levels of Australian society.
Yes, I wouldn't mind betting that our Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, was on the phone to him, the Israeli ambassador, to say to the Prime Minister of Israel, this is not the time to be making these remarks. I thought it was quite remarkable, to be candid, that he weighed in after such a tragedy. I thought that was very, in fact, if I'd been Albanese, I could see Albanese was determinedly calm. I understand the logic, but I think I would have politely said, with the greatest respect, this is not the time as Australia tries to deal with this. But anyway, we'll see. Not that that would have necessarily affected Mr. Netanyahu, I suppose.
Yeah, and I guess the reality as well, Geraldine, for the Australian government in responding to this is that they have to grapple with the fact that whilst there may be significant opposition to a foreign leader weighing in the way that Benjamin Netanyahu did, I've certainly heard those sentiments echoed here in Bondi by members of the Jewish community. And so there is a domestic iteration of that same position, which exists at the centre of this tragedy, which one way or another our leaders will have to contend with.
Yes, this is something that we'll no doubt be contending with next year as well.
So, Geraldine, now that you've been here for a little while in Bondi, placing this in the global context, how are you reflecting on things?
I'm reflecting on the difficulty of weighing everything up together, of allowing the values that people being able to express themselves versus the trickiness of having a very multicultural society. I don't think it's as easy as it has been, and how we do that in the future. Look, we'll work our way through it, but we're being reminded that it's just going to remain a very difficult balancing act. And I'll tell you what, it's best when there's no shooting wars happening anywhere. That's really what I'm taking out of this, that incredible... The combination of October the 7th and Gaza just fraying already stretched emotions.
I think having stood here and reported here this week, what stands out to me is that, yes, this was an attack directly targeting the Jewish community of Sydney, but in choosing this location, Bondi Beach, they chose a space that the city, the nation defines itself by. And so somehow these gunmen have also attacked something core to our identity as Australians, whoever we are, wherever we come from, whatever our story is. And in that, they've presented us with a challenge in interpreting this moment, but also finding the way to rise above and go beyond that terrible act in a way that is true to who we are. There's something about this place... Bondi that speaks to us as Australians. The images of people voting in their speedos here at Bondi Beach go around the world. It's somehow a symbol of our democracy. It's the place that people come from all over the world to see. This is not the exclusive domain of any one culture or race or creed, Bondi Beach. This is where all Australians can come, do come, to be together and make the most of this place.
I agree. I mean, if it happened at the Taj Mahal or at the Eiffel Tower, it would be a similar sort of challenge, you know, in a way one could argue for another set of cultures.
Thank you very much for your company on this episode of Global Roaming. We hope we've done justice to these terrible events that have unfolded in Australia and added something for you in trying to process this for yourself. To let you know, we've already recorded our summer series for Global Roaming, and we actually think, given the timing, that it may be an opportunity for us to think above, beyond, maybe even creatively about where Australia goes. The series is called Getting Lucky Again. The idea is to invite five Australians thinking in different ways from different sectors about where Australia goes next. And we hope that this series, which will start rolling out shortly in your podcast feed and on ABC Radio National, will be a good tonic, at least, or a thought starter for you as you try to turn your mind ahead to the year and the years ahead.
It could actually be incredibly appropriate because there's a lot of marvellous stuff about Australian possibilities there. So I really do urge you to take part in it. I think you'll enjoy it, and we very much want to hear from you. So, Hamish.
Thank you very much for coming and meeting me here at Bondi, Geraldine.
I'm quite affected by it.
Yeah, I wish it were in better circumstances. But thanks to our producer, Taryn Priyadko. And as always, please keep your feedback coming. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.